live from New York City. It's the Dream Shakers podcast. I'm your host, Stefan Odom, here with my co-host,
George Nunez.
And we're back with O.C. Duale, the founder slash CEO of OnTouchGo, an ad startup that uses GPS technology to bring brand awareness to companies through transportation. Prior to OnTouchGo, Bo worked at Solara Inc., CalQuo, and Black Hawk Network. He also studied computer technology and computer systems technology at Collin College. So, without further ado, welcome to the pod, Bo.
Yeah, thank you, guys. It's a pleasure to be here on the podcast with you, Steph and George, and excited to talk to you guys about OnTouchGo. And yeah, let's get it rock and rolling.
Sure, Bo. We appreciate you, man. How are you feeling this Friday afternoon? What's going on? Well, talk to us. What's going on through your head, man?
What's going on through my head? You know, just blessed to be here on the planet another day. You know, right now it's a very exciting time for us at OnTouchGo. We have been working really hard on our online ad manager for our platform. So, you know, we worked through some bugs, some testing, and, you know, we're strategizing how do we get this out to market at scale here across Texas. So there's a lot of enthusiasm. And yeah, I guess Friday spent working on that project a bit and planning the next steps next week.
Absolutely. And before we get into OnTouchGo, we got to take it a step back here because we know that everyone has a journey and we often start somewhere, right, from a particular beginning. So how was it being born in Baltimore, then after that, transitioning into Dallas with that African Nigerian upbringing, that Nigerian background? What was that like? Walk us through that.
You know, the first thing I will tell you when I moved here to Dallas, the first thing you'd notice is the water tastes like rocks out here. it really tastes like rocks. And but besides that, it was a cultural shift. I mean, the East Coast is definitely vastly different than, you know, the Southern states. And just, you know, I grew up as I was already one of those kids that was different anyway, no matter which geography I'm in. And so, you know, Texas, you know, everyone's super into football, sports, and here I come, a kid, I'm wearing like skinny jeans and stuff. And so, yeah, that took a while to get adopted into, you know, just a normal culture. But yeah, I mean, growing up, my experience from Baltimore, you know, it's kind of the mecca of Nigerians or Nigerian culture in America. Listeners are not aware. And to come in Dallas, where, I mean, we do have like a Nigerian base here. And I have some, I guess, cousins and family here. But, you know, it's definitely more diverse out of here in Dallas. So just being exposed to that. And yeah, it, you know, I grew up, I went to school in a place called Prosper. So Prosper is a suburb of Dallas, actually, and, you know, met some cool people and, you know, I'm here today.
You mentioned you've always had this individualist streak, right? You've always been your own person. How do you, or what was the process like of understanding that you were going to ultimately enter technology, right? Like that was going to be the lane that you were going to carve for yourself. Can you walk us through that, especially in a place like Texas in the South where, you know, maybe at the time tech wasn't as prevalent as it is on the East and the West Coast?
Yeah, so my introduction to tech, I want to say it was accelerated through my work experience at Solara. Solara is an automotive technology company. They were an IPO or public company. They were taken off the market by Vista Equity Partners. And just honestly coming in contact with, you know, Vista Equity and seeing Robert F. Smith, who's, I believe, still the richest Black man in America, you know, that's kind of been, well, not kind of, that is inspiring, right? And so you kind of peep at that and say, okay, what is he doing, right? And then that exposes you to the larger landscape that is venture capital, private equity, startup, right? And I remember working at Solara, you know, I was entry level all the way to heading sales of a product there, and I wanted more responsibility. And, you know, the VP goes, you should think about a startup, right? Because there's only so much you can do as an entrepreneur within a company, right? And so that kind of accelerated my, working or my experience at a startup, because subsequently what I ended up doing is thinking of something that I could create with a group of friends from Solera. And that's how OnTouch Go was birthed.
And let's dive into OnTouch Go, right? Like, if you can let the audience know what it is, right? What made you get into it? And I believe from what Steph and I read before, it was called Oyster, and you guys kind of rebranded to OnTouch Go. So explain that. Like, we want to know more about that.
Yeah, so essentially at OnTouch Go, we're using displays in rideshare vehicles to show passengers or audiences ads based on geolocation, right? So we're trying to bring contextualization to the passenger experience. And the ultimate goal is for that passenger to say, like, hey, this is a cool spot, let me change my destination, or now I know where it is, or, you know, just be aware of the advertiser. It started as that simple of an idea, because literally we were living downtown, we're going out, we're using Uber a lot, and we're always asking our Uber driver, hey, where should we go? And we thought, hey, we should build a platform that's similar to Taxi TV with new bells and whistles. What that has evolved into, as we did more research and tested with different brands, is we realized the gap in outdoor advertising. So 96 cents on every dollar currently spent on advertising goes to other channels outside of outdoor advertising. And the reason why that is less than 4% of the displays used in outdoor advertising are digitally enabled. So what that means is the advertisers can't tap into 96% of the inventory on demand. And so rideshare is one of the fastest growing verticals in outdoor advertising, because you do have these digital displays, right? And so we built an online interface where these displays are connected to where you can plan, purchase, and measure your outdoor campaign. And right now we're in rideshare, but, you know, our 3-5 year technical vision would be to encompass multiple types of displays.
The emphasis on displays, are these tablets? Are these OEM interfaces? What specifically do you mean when you use that term?
Yeah, so these are essentially commercial grade tablets as far as the rideshare space goes.
Is there an aim to ultimately partner with OEMs when you think of things like autonomous driving? Like, you would then have an interface built in. I'm sorry, you're providing the company this set of software, they leverage it internally, and maybe there's a kickback that way. Are we thinking of this as like the third space? Have those conversations been started internally?
We've thought about that internally. It's kind of interesting, right? If you look at the new vehicles that are manufactured, a lot of them are already coming standard with or stock with a tablet display in the back seat, right? And so for us, that's a software play, right? We can maybe have a application on that OEM's screen. And so we do see those opportunities. And when you think about from a leisure standpoint, the passenger experience with autonomous cars, what are you really going to do with that average 15-minute ride, right? Are you just going to look at the roof, or more likely you're going to have a display or form of entertainment in there? So we see that as a potential and a strong partnership opportunity for sure.
And the ad space right now, right, to a certain degree could be deemed as oversaturated or ripe and filled with competition. Why did you decide that this would be the right industry to enter, especially through the lane of rideshare transportation, right? Like what drove you? Did you do a case study? I know you said like the idea birthed at your previous experience at your recent company that you worked for, but like talk to us about that.
Yeah, so kind of our process, we incorporated in 2019 March. And so how we began is we did a pilot. First, we wanted to test the assumption of, do passengers even like ads? And our ads are more local and regionalized to bring more relevancy, almost like a travel tourism niche to it, right? So it's not necessarily focused on the major branding we all know and love. It's more focused on places people can go. And so we originally set up a test with a couple dozen displays in 2019 in the summer. And what we found from the feedback of the drivers was, you know, passengers are asking about these places. Some cases, passengers are changing their trip destination to one advertiser because of a strong messaging that was on that advertisement. And that's how we, I guess, gathered the confidence to continue within the transportation or mobility space, because it just seems like an obvious thing to do. I don't think we've ever been in a situation where we were forcing a certain moment or thing that we've been doing at On Touch Go. It's all felt very natural, like we're following a story in a book. And so, yeah, that if that answers your question.
You've been using we a lot, the team. The collective effort that's behind getting this vision out there, getting it to scale. So what was that process of meeting your co-founder? How did you two come in contact with each other? And then how did you know that it was going to be the right fit to really achieve that larger vision?
And shout outs to you and your co-founder, and definitely the co-founder as well, Morales, just because we read up on the story and we understand that he lost his sister through cancer. So yeah, definitely, yeah, unfortunately, prayers and condolences go out to him and his family. But yeah, that was definitely strong on his part to push through with you, and you guys stay strong through COVID.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, George. To answer your question, Steph, so how I met Furman is he also worked at Solaire. And so he literally was the next software team over, right? So, and it's actually funny, right? I'm a big rap fan and a big Travis Scott fan. And so Furman worked at Solaire through a referral of a mutual friend. And I met that friend in the elevator at Solaire. And I'm more introverted, right? So I rarely will go out of my way to spark a conversation, but Astroworld just dropped and I was super excited. And I go in the elevator, I say, "Hey, Alfredo, do you," that's our mutual friend, I say, "do you like Astroworld?" And he liked it. And so we became friends. And then and looking back, it's kind of funny how everything, you know, from a macro view, looking back, how everything kind of shapes, right? Had I not said that, probably wouldn't be here today, right? And so we initially found that we balanced each other out. So that's why Furman and I kind of decided to make a venture. And then also we had a third founder at the time who also came from Solaire. But unfortunately, you know, they just decided the startup world wasn't for them, right? And then now we have Vince, who, you know, is a co-founder, if you will. And then he's our CTO. And Vince has joined since the beginning of the year.
I know offline we got a chance to talk a bit about you being in the process of fundraising. Talk to the audience on what that's like, right? The whole process, some of the mental battles you have to go through to just continuously push through, whether if it's raising from angels, family and friends, or even raising from targeted venture capital firms that make the best sense in our, like, specifically aligned with your goals and vision of On Touch Go?
Yes. So first and foremost, wow, fundraising is definitely a difficult challenge. And for me, I always base my, I like to forecast. And one thing I didn't forecast is just the politicalness of fundraising, right? I'm someone, I think very logically, and I think, well, because I know I have X and Y talents, and you know, I do, you know, I put due diligence forth with my work, that's going to equate to X, right? And that's not the case in fundraising, unfortunately. And one of the hardships or challenges I've really have faced was just the whole minority thing. And for us, you know, for me, looking back, if you ask me 3 years ago or 2 years ago, I'm not that type of, I'm a very strong-willed person. Again, I just think if someone has a conversation with me, they're going to gravitate towards my intelligence and how well I know the numbers, et cetera, et cetera. And that's not the case, right? Venture capital is a world where, you know, you need warm introductions, you need connections, you need inner workings, you need significant traction, especially if you're in a industry like us, where in a lot of senses, you're first to market. And, you know, what if you don't have, or you have limited history as far as venture transactions that have happened in your industry, it's going to make it, you know, two times harder, right? And so for us, with fundraising, what has worked for us is, you know, organically building those relationships so we can get those warm introductions, doing, you know, engagements like this, getting as much volume of audience as we can. And then also doing innovative things. So like right now we're doing a WeFunder campaign, right? And one of the things that we thought would be innovative and cool as a success story that our product works is to validate that our product works is to use our own network to advertise our fundraise, which we have been doing. And so in the last 3 weeks, we've gotten probably close to 50 investment reservations, right? So we've been doing some really interesting things. So yeah, that's been our experience with fundraising. But I think, you know, regardless if it's challenging or not, at the end of the day, every time you try something, you're going to come back with a different perspective. You're going to get better and better and better and better, right? There's a reason why second time and third time and fourth time founders become really efficient, right? So yeah, this is our first go around. I'm sure after time we'll be fine.
Yeah, for sure. And just a follow-up question, what made you guys choose a specific platform like WeFunder versus other crowdfunding platforms like Republic and many others?
Yeah, so, you know, ultimately, we had a choice between, you know, we looked at WeFunder, Republic, and Start Engine. And for us, honestly, WeFunder just made the process a whole lot easier, right? It's less, you know, and they're all great platforms, don't get me wrong, but it just made the process easier for us. It less middleman and right to the point, right? Because with us, we had a network of people we could speak to. So we didn't really need the platform that we're on to intervene way too much, right? We just needed somewhere where we can build our profile and start, you know, collecting the reservations for investment.
Now, you mentioned that this is going to be, you know, one method to build capital for the business long term, assuming as well that, you know, at later points there would still be a seed raise and so on and so forth. But currently, by the numbers which you had alluded to earlier, you know, what does OnTouch Go look like on paper, right? Like, what is the revenue the company is generating? How do you think that's going to continue to scale as you introduce new localities? What are some of the things that are happening behind the scenes in terms of a number standpoint?
Yes. Yeah, so with our MVP pilot with 25 displays in Dallas, we've generated over 50,000 in sales from that. Currently, we're running close to 30 active campaigns on our network as we speak. So with our business model, there's two buckets you look at, right? You have this monthly recurring bucket, which 35% of our advertisers fall into. And then you have this transactional seasonal, which is a bucket, which is traditionally how outdoor is going. And so looking at our data, if you combine those two buckets within a 12-month time frame, we're going to fall around like 75 to 100,000. You know, we haven't really been focused on revenue. We've been focused on product development. We got a lot of feedback from July and from July of last year to now, right? We've had over, you know, close to, well, we had 150 pilot customers, right? So we've gotten a lot of feedback and we realized the real pain point to grow at scale is going to be how well you can prove brand attribution and measure how audiences are engaging with that advertisement. So we took a step back internally and said, yeah, we're really good at sales, right? I mean, we've worked with Warner Bros, Hilton, Hyatt, Reunion, Tower, FC Dell, really big names and really local names as well. But we took a step back from sales and said, how can we build a product that the customers are gonna sell for us, right? And so you're gonna, whatever we lost in MRR or revenue run rate in that period of time, we will gain back, right, at scale. With the customers loving the product.
I think we've been talking about the customers from the vantage point of the individuals that are in the backseat, but what have been the views from the individuals that are actually driving the vehicles, that actually own the vehicles, that have opted to have this platform and service within their cars? What has that interaction been like, and what's been the feedback from those stakeholders?
And follow up on that question, to Steph's point, do you guys foresee a potential partnership with an Uber or Lyft or Via to further expand the awareness of OnTouch Go?
Yeah, great question. So number one, we pay the drivers $100 a month at least in fixed income, which, you know, for a rideshare industry or gig economy worker, that's going to be you know, significant, right? That helps them pay an extra bill or two. So their experience, I want to say, is overwhelmingly positive, right? For them, it's plug and play. It's business as usual. You know, you keep the display plugged in to a charger and, you know, you're making additional income. As far as their experience with passengers, they overwhelmingly positive. Again, they'll say how it sparks conversation. We've all been in an Uber where it's, you know, the Uber driver's quiet or it's a little bit awkward. Well, with the display, you know, it kind of creates a nice medium, right, for them to spark a conversation with the driver. Like, hey, this is a cool place. Like, do you know about this? And, you know, when that trickles down, what that ultimately means is more revenue for that driver beyond what we're paying them, because the reviews are going to go up, because the passenger is like, wow, I've never really seen an Uber with this before. Or the conversation is going to spark them to tip them, or they might change their destination. So their fare goes up because they increase the mile count on their fare. And then to your second question, Steph, what was the second question again?
The second question is, have you guys thought about potentially formalizing partnerships with Uber, Lyft, or Via to further push the brand of OnTouch Go?
Yeah, so we definitely see a play with partnering with Uber and Lyft. For us, why we haven't engaged with that yet is because we believe the market for purchasing ad inventory in rideshare has to mature a little bit, and then that partnership will ultimately make sense from a data standpoint. And if you look at Uber and Lyft right now, they do have interest in mobility and advertising, right? So, you know, Uber has partnered with a platform called Adomni, which is basically taxi rooftop advertising, but digitalized in the rideshare space. And then Lyft recently acquired a startup called Halo that has been in operation for, you know, less than 2 years. And so to do the same thing, right? And so we think as the interior space matures, right, it'd be a good strategy for us to partner with them. But for right now, there's just so many independent contractors in this space. There's, you know, north of between 3 and 4 million Uber and Lyft drivers in the US alone. Then on top of that, within mobility, you can also count taxis. There's 18 million taxi drivers in the world, right? So it's an infinite space. And for us, when we think about how large we want the company to be, you know, at least, you know, between 40,000 and 100,000 displays. So we don't need a significant amount of the entire rideshare or mobility space. We just need a significant amount to where if you're in, you know, New York, you know, one out of every 10 rides you take, you're going to interact with one of our screens.
You mentioned earlier that the brands are on board, that they're in favor of this platform, that they're willing to continue to sign up and sign extensions. How are the brands gauging success here? Is there a promo code that these customers are using? Are there external websites that they navigate to from the tablet interface? How is that being tracked?
Yeah, great questions. So there's several metrics we measure. Impressions being one of them, interactions, attention time, which is a calculation of eye fixation. So I guess at the core of our platform, right, you have the four things. You have the our content management server, right? You have the audience measurement component, which is analyzing how the audience is paying attention to the ad, different demographics of that audience to report back in a way that's similar to what you would see on Facebook or Google, et cetera. You have the touch component, right? The touch center. So are they interacting with the ad? What are they clicking on? Are they putting in form intake into that advertisement, like enter your cell phone for a discount? And then the fourth thing would be, fourth or fifth thing would be contextualizing what that means with location data, right? So again, our goal is to really help that advertiser. Our main use case is going to be store visitation as the main value proposition. And so for us, if you're targeting, let's say you own a restaurant and you're targeting, you know, all the rideshares within a 10 block proximity, when you log into our dashboard and ad manager, you're going to see live location impressions real time, right? So quite literally, you might be able to see two customers walk in physically and then check the live location data and say, like, oh, they came from there. So yeah, that's kind of how we measure it now. We do have, of course, QR codes and all that to track that. We are going to work more heavily to enhance that and build pixels and different ways to measure that in a meaningful way so they can track online attribution as well. But yeah, it's just end to end. We want to create that full picture of ROI.
We've heard awareness, we've heard interaction between the ads and people, but we're at an interesting time where ads are pervasive. Right? They're everywhere. You see them as posters, billboards, you even see them on bus stops and train stations. We're in an age where people are in a state of ad fatigue. So how do you continuously keep those people engaged?
Yeah, so I love that question. Going back to the earlier point, 96% of the displays used in outdoor advertising, which are going to be those displays, those posters we see on our everyday commutes, those are not digitally enabled. And so in a lot of sense, they can become irrelevant, right, or not contextual to me as a individual. And when you digitalize that, it creates the opportunity to create some interesting things. So one of my favorite movies I like to point to illustrate kind of what the potential may look like in the future is Tom Cruise from Minority Report, when he kind of walks into the store and it says like, hey, I forget his name, but hey, Tom Cruise, would you like, you know, X, Y, and Z product? And so that's where the future's going. But I do agree that advertisements can be intrusive. And so that's why we believe that advertising has to be fun, you know, again. And right now, what you've seen over the course of maybe the last decade is we're losing creativity, right? Even some of the Super Bowl ads aren't as entertaining anymore, because what you've seen, or what I've seen, or at least what my opinion is that's going on, is that a lot of the professionals in marketing and the marketing departments, they're more metric based. They've fallen in love with certain buzzwords like CPM, you know, click-through rate, et cetera. And they've lost they're out of touch with what marketing really is, right? And so, and that's to tell an eloquent story about your brand. And, you know, so I think with, you know, things like consumer privacy laws being more aggressive in the United States, you know, with the whole Apple thing, the cookie thing, it forces advertisers in a situation where they're going to have to be more creative, right? And you look at the recent albums with Drake and Kanye that just came out, right? They're using billboards, right? That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Like, Drake's using a billboard in the cities where the featured artists are from and saying like, hey, on the album. I don't think anyone finds that. I mean, I'm sure someone hates everything, but for most people, right, I think that's pretty cool and they would agree. So I think we have to get back to that. And I think our platform is going to enable that at scale in the future, but also provide that education, because you ultimately have to care about creativity. Unfortunately, with a lot of industries, the people who are in power are people that don't necessarily care from a creativity standpoint. They're just people in power. And so hopefully we can be one of those statistics, those rare anomalies that occur every so, you know, every once in a decade or so and get ourselves in a position of power to where we can influence that creativity. Because at the end of the day, if your campaign isn't creative, it's not going to work. Everyone wants their campaign to work, but not everyone can afford a WPP agency or a top agency to help them make the best work. But we can be in a position to use data to tell our customers, like, hey, this is not working in comparison to, you know, your competitors. You might want to change it up. And then use managed services to help facilitate that.
So one piece in a broader system then, like the canary in the coal mine, so to speak, given that initial signal that you're going down the wrong path.
Correct.
Now, one thing that you mentioned in that last response that was incredibly interesting was that privacy focus, right? Traditionally, advertising has gotten a bad rap, especially in the modern day age, right? Because it's so demanding of users' info, right? And in a way that's often seen as exploitative, right? You mentioned that you wouldn't be adversely impacted by Apple's stances because of the format that you're leveraging. How is OnTouch Go still thinking through the aspect of how much data is too much data?
Yes. So for us, you know, you don't want, like for us, we don't want, unless you want to enroll in an individual advertiser's offering, right? You know, let's say Lexus was advertising and, you know, you can win a free car. Unless you opt into that legally from an, you know, from a consumer standpoint, we don't want your personal information. We think a lot of advertisements can be contextualized just using geospatial information, right? And again, the only reason why we're in this position is because marketing stakeholders are out of touch with what marketing and advertising really is. They're really glued to CPM and CTR, and they're trying to prove by percentile basis or basis points these metrics that they see on a report from Google. And because of that, they're out of touch with their actual customer bases. And that's what's going on in a larger hand. And so it's a big challenge, I agree. And it's not going to happen overnight. Maybe it's a situation where, you know, 70% of our customers are getting it right on our platform and 30% are not. But again, if we can quickly identify those 30% and help them, the more the merrier. But to answer your question with privacy, yeah, you don't need ultimately too much information on that. We're not trying to track you all the way into your phone, right? We just need to use geospatial information to say, like, hey, it's likely that this person was one of the audiences exposed to this ad in this Uber. So display this ad here, right? So that's kind of the baseline intelligence we use.
You also noticed that you were looking to expand to Houston, San Antonio, and all of Texas. So what's the timing specifically on that scaling or that scalability?
Yes, I'd like to say, you know, I want to be very careful with timelines because sometimes I think 2020 humbled me. I spent, you know, my grandfather was, I don't know if a CFO or senior finance person, but a senior finance person for ExxonMobil in Nigeria. And I think I got a lot of his Excel. A lot of them think they had Excel back in those days, but a lot of his finance goes from him. And how that alludes to what you're saying is, I spend a lot of time forecasting stuff, and I just want to get into the habit of not forecasting stuff because I just end up being wrong, especially if you don't predict the pandemic that was almost like an end of the world event. I'd like to say, though, our goal is 2,000 displays in the Texas markets, so Dallas, Houston, Austin, San Antonio, and we'd like to achieve that goal 12 months from this podcast, you know, being launched now. So we'll see. It might be sooner. It might be later. But we'll see. And hopefully the universe is like, he's learning his lesson about forecasting stuff.
That's the right stance to take. That's the right stance to take. Well, with that, I'm going to go ahead and provide you with the final question for today's interview. So here at Dream Shakers, we very much value paying it forward, right? And we want our audience to be able to grow along with us. So what would be three pieces of advice that you would have gave your younger self?
That is a good question. Okay. Number one, see education as a platform. You know, I don't know if anyone or one of here or one of your listeners is into Myers-Briggs, but I'm INTJ, right? And so we can be very difficult as kids. And so I was a brilliant kid growing up in school, but I didn't really take it seriously. But looking back now in venture capital, from a venture capital perspective, you can get into a lot of rooms if you're from Stanford, if you're from Yale, if you're from Harvard, if you're McKinsey and Company alumni or one of the big four, right, alumni. And so I would tell myself like, hey, even if you're gonna quit after a year, you know, maybe do that, right? That's one thing I'd tell myself. Number two, I've developed a lot on a personal basis, going through the ups and downs of a startup, right? And a lot of us as individuals, we don't lean into our intuition. And for me, I would tell myself, lean into your intuition as strongly as possible. And that will take you and move you to the right places, most likely. And then the third thing I'd tell myself is, oh man, this is pretty tough. But the third thing I'd tell myself is, I guess, work from the top down. A lot of us, we have an immediate goal and we can get so caught up in our own perception of it when we now live in an age where that information is readily available. So I'll give you an example. So if you were to launch the next SpaceX, right, your natural instinct might be to, you know, read a book or, you know, work at NASA or whatever, right? My approach now would be to look at SpaceX entirely as a whole and then work my way down, right? And, or a better example actually, because, you know, rocket sciences can be very complex, is venture capital, right? Trying to raise venture capital. Don't go about it with your own perspective of how it works. What is the day in the life of a venture capitalist, you know, a venture associate, a managing partner, a principal? And try to understand that psychology and work your way down into how they interface with you and then use that to your advantage, if that makes sense. So those are the three things that I would tell myself, or past self, if my past self would listen. So,
well, Bo, we truly appreciate you. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for talking about Untouch Gold. Thank you for talking about brand awareness and those jewels and gems that you just dropped, man. I think it's definitely important. And that last piece about playing the game, right? Like, if you knew what you know now, how imperative it is to play that game. So we look forward to seeing what Untouch Gold has to offer, where you are a couple of months from now. We definitely want to have you back on the pod to share stories, because I think your insight is very valuable and our audience and our listeners will learn so much and take away so much from this episode. So thank you so much. As you know, you're definitely a dream shaker and we appreciate it.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here on Dream Shakers and look forward to hopping on here again.
And we're back. That was a great conversation we had with Bo, detailing his background, what led to the creation of Untouch Go, and what he envisions for the future of his company and the future of advertising more generally. It was also really interesting to hear that the water down in Texas can oftentimes taste like rocks. What did you think about the interview, George?
The fact that the water tastes like rocks is just inhumane and crazy, but hey, shout outs to people in Texas and shout outs to people in Dallas and cheers. And here's to hoping that you guys can have better tasting water. And so that it doesn't taste like rock. But Bo did an amazing job, to Steph's point, talking about the ad space, the ad tech space, and how to make ads more engaging so that brands can be more noticeable to consumers, and how he's literally sticking his hand and placing his hand or footprint in this industry and making strides with On Touch Go. So we truly salute Bo for being a creative, for being a dream shaker, and we would love to have him on future episodes to come.
Now, with that, we're going to go ahead and transition into the Level Up. Now, here's where we provide you with three. That's right, three opportunities to begin your own career in tech. First up, we have a product design internship at Apple. Apple is currently seeking enthusiastic mechanical engineer majors who can start work anytime between September 2021 to September 2022. The interns will provide support to design, engineering, prototyping, and validation activities for all hardware product lines. Over the course of the internship, you will help to create the next generation of the world's finest hardware devices. You will conceive, design, and bring into production products that will redefine the user experience. And you will work closely with many different multifunctional teams, including industrial design, packaging, safety, hardware engineering, EMC, and marketing. You are fit for this role if you have experience with plastic and metal part design, you have 3D CAD skills, and finally, you have strong analytical problem-solving skills and the ability to use statistical tools and techniques. The internship will be based out of Cupertino, California. Up next, we have a business program and operations intern at Microsoft. At Microsoft, interns work on real-world projects and collaborations with teams across the world while having fun along the way. Applications to these opportunities are considered for business program manager roles. Over the course of the internship, you will provide the end-to-end delivery of products, services, processes, or technologies by using established project program and process management methodologies. You will develop, build, run, and improve consistent, predictable, and measurable processes and services that align with policies, procedures, and expectations. And you will build trusted partnerships to enable great experiences. You are fit for this role if you are currently pursuing or have completed a bachelor's degree in business, finance, operations, information technology, or related field with at least one semester/quarter remaining after the internship. You have formal training in project and process management, financial accounting, business strategy, and or operations. And finally, you have excellent verbal and written communication, analytical, and presentation skills. The internship will be based out of Redmond, Washington. Finally, we have a finance and accounting intern at PayPal. Finance and accounting professionals at PayPal manage the planning, reporting, and operations of financials. As an essential member of the finance and accounting teams, you will work closely with both engineering and business functions to plan and report on financials, transaction loss, and operating expenses. Over the course of the internship, you will assist with annual budgeting and monthly forecasting processes, prepare ad hoc analysis and business case modeling as per business requirements, and engage in continuous process improvement efforts to streamline financial planning and budget management processes for efficiency and accuracy. You are fit for this role if you have an inherent interest in finance/accounting and great business acumen. You are a great communicator with focus and attention to details. And finally, you have advanced Microsoft Excel and PowerPoint skills. Now, this internship will be based out of New York, New York. Those are all of the opportunities I have for you for this week. So I'm going to hand it back to George, and he's going to close us out.
Thank you greatly, Steph, for those opportunities. We appreciate it and appreciate you. And for those tuning in, continue to tune in. We have more free game for you guys, and it just only gets better. Please subscribe to our YouTube page. Subscribe to any podcast outlet that you utilize for us, whether if it's Amazon, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. Also tune into our Instagram page, the Dream Shakers page. And that's Dream Shakers with a 3. And it's an underscore between the dream and the shakers. And make sure that you send us an email or reach out if you have any questions, comments, and what you would like to see or how we could improve or what topics you want us to talk about. Until then, see you later. Stay safe. Stay strong. Take care.